Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. I am so excited about our guest. I know we have to do announcements, but I can't wait to get to our guest today. She's a flight attendant who has insider information about 9/11, not only the particular event, but how that event is a very small part of a larger scheme. She's written a book, Methodical Illusion, and well, I'm going to show it to you on Amazon here, where you can get it. That tells the story, but it's by Rebecca Roth, and we're going to have her on in a few minutes to tell the rest of the story, because this is incredibly exciting. We just met her this morning, officially, and we did a whole show before the show. She has so much stuff to do or to talk about. But we need to tell people that we are simultaneously broadcasting. You can go to Blog Talk Radio at 347-850-1407 and listen to the show. Or you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, go to our radio link, and by the way, there is a site. There's new stuff, new things on the site, so you can find things easier. Go to Blog Talk Radio, and right down the line you'll see Join WebEx Meeting. It's in blue, and it says sign in with your first and last name. And there's a picture of Rebecca Roth and her book and a link to her book. So we're going to get to that just as soon as we can. We're coming to you from the studios of Sound Health and the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. We're a registered 501c3 nonprofit. We're the largest alternative research center in Ohio. And what we do is put a microphone in front of your voice, and we have a computer program that can tell us what your intent is, what your purpose, why you are saying the things that you're saying. And for those of you who are practitioners, you'll be able to interpret what's going on. But those of you who've never heard of this before, go to soundhealthoptions.com, downloads, and this program is free to the public because we think you have a right to know, absolutely, about who's telling the truth, whether it's your president or your kid or your husband or your next-door neighbor or whoever. So there's not going to be any drawing this week for the free software, because that software is already free to anybody who wants it. And there's also a tiny nano manual that you can request that'll teach you how to do this in book form, but there's also a video there for you to watch. We love it that you're with us. We love it that you want to know the truth. And wow, are we going to get the truth today? I'm going to hurry through the keynote. Richard, if you want to make it a little announcement about that.
Sure. I'm chomping at the bit. The keynote is this great thing. There's this what I call cosmic eminence, which is a sound or a frequency that comes toward the planet. Sherry's software reads this sound and gives us an interpretation of what's happening for a period of about 5 to 7 days. And I know other agencies with acronyms probably read it as well. I think they have no idea what it is or, you know, what to do with it. They just go, ooh, wow, man. But Sherry's software actually interprets it, and that's this great thing called the keynote.
And it is on our website under In the News. And we always put up some little thing that we think will be interesting to you. Gossip dies when it hits a wise person's ears. And there was another one that by Teddy Roosevelt that I was sort of vacillating about whether to put it up, and it says, our duty is not to support our president, but to support our country, which I thought was great. Somebody has their mic open. Please, would you keep it shut? That was nice rain sound, but we need to keep the airways clear. Okay. This is about frequencies that NASA looks at and whatever, and we just wrote a computer program that will interpret it. So we call this frequency beget, to atoms beget cells beget life, because this is the beginning of the whole cycle. The note of C, the frequencies of about 130 cycles per second, we perceive as the beginning because that's how rainbows are laid down. When you look at the layers of the rainbow, each of those layers can be looked at as a color, but also as a frequency. So that's where we begin our trip through the year, as about March 22nd or so. Time for decisions that will bring together your perceptions and actions to manifest your vision of the future. If something is holding you back, expect some low back stress. Our bodies often give us clues as to where our emotional stress is taking us. As with the beginning of the calendar year, this is the time of the beginning of life as oxygen and sulfur frequencies become active. It's my opinion that in the beginning, the fundamental frequencies of the universe bang together to create what is here today, from our atoms to ourselves to all that we are. We can show bioacoustically how the original elements move together, combining and recombining to create what's here. If any of you would like a copy of the chart we created, please write to sherryonair@gmail.com. And I have posted that chart on our site. So if any of you would like a copy of it, or you can do a screen grab of it, and it shows you how frequencies move together to create matter. And this looks like math as medicine, or the beginning of the Big Bang. There are other things that are going through all of this. C7 is, your neck is in stress, lower back is in stress, cortisol. But you can go to the site and read it there, because I'm just too excited about our guests to read the rest of it. How's that?
Yes.
Would you introduce our guest?
I'd love to. Rebecca Ross' expertise and training as a flight attendant allowed her to research the events of September 11th, 2001, which shocks me that it was that long ago, with an insider's knowledge that eventually led her to discover details and answers to some of the most haunting questions surrounding that infamous day in our history. After thousands of hours of research using official government documents, print and video media from 9/11, and many, many hours of other research, Rebecca discovered that there were also at least two women involved in the 9/11 event. Using her personal knowledge of in-flight procedures, FAA hijacking protocols, the state of Massachusetts, and cell phone technology, she discovered yet-to-be-exposed details concerning the planes, the passengers, and the perpetrators, which are woven into her great read, Methodical Illusion. Welcome, Rebecca Ross.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry and Richard. It's great to be here.
As I said, I have to dump this right in at the beginning. Backstage, we were talking with Rebecca before the show, and I said that I thought that a great, I'd like to see a bundle package of her book, Methodical Illusion, and the DVD, Wag the Dog. I think they go together so amazingly well. Okay, excuse my interruption.
Well, you know, it's true, and my own personal discovery, once I made the discovery that several of the hijackers were still alive, as I was actually not looking into 9/11, and yet I was in cognitive dissonance. I couldn't look at it. I stopped flying in 2004, and I kind of didn't look back, although I knew from day one that things were not right, and that cell phone calls couldn't be made from altitude, and the protocols weren't followed. Everything about that event, I watched it luckily on the ground on television, but wasn't following our FAA strictly enforced hijack protocols. The pilots didn't follow theirs. And there were all these things that were abnormal. But I chose, I made a conscious decision to stay in my safe little world and not look at that deeply, even though I knew that it couldn't have been true. In 2008 or 9, somewhere in there, I was in my retirement, and I thought, well, I'm going to write a book about that lifestyle. And I met lots of interesting people, and there were, I mean, even my coworkers were very interesting. And some of the flight attendants, and people don't even realize this, that they're attorneys or they're firefighters or they're, you know, just well, they work other jobs as well. Some are emergency nurses and just amazing people. And so I went to grab a name for a character in a novel that I started, had nothing to do with 9/11. And I thought I wanted a Middle Eastern gentleman, so I thought, well, I'll just Google search the 19 hijackers from 9/11. And up in front of me came a BBC article dated September 23rd, 2001, telling me that the Saudi government was suing the United States government and the FBI for stealing the identity and for making false claims against their citizens that were, in fact, still alive. One of them was an airline pilot for Saudi Air that had had his passport stolen while he was in Denver, Colorado, I believe. And that was just a hammer over my head. I'm like, I remember watching all of those four crash sites. I didn't ever see an airplane crash at the Pentagon, and I didn't see one at Shanksville. I did see some kind of airplane go into the South Tower. I never saw anything go into the North Tower, but the building on fire. And so with all the other, you know, initial red flags I had, I started a research session of several hours, several years, and I gathered as much information as I could. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do with all this information? And I just thought, well, why don't I just deliver this all in an easy-to-read, fun-to-read novel that takes the reader into the life of this flight attendant and how she pulls herself out of cognitive dissonance. And what you're going to see is what basically what happened to me. As I discovered the nanothermite from a physics professor that had gone through the dust that was left from the towers falling and found traces of explosives, nanothermites are real hot burning, and it's something that can actually make metals liquefy. It's so hot. And I just went through all of this stuff, and I took my character through that. And as people first experience her just being a professional in the airline, they also then see that she starts to wake up to the truth about 9/11 through the different characters that are presented to her. So I wrote it to wake people up and to help people come out of that, because once the truth in 9/11 is exposed and you start to see that you've been lied to and the tail has, in fact, wagged the dog, you'll be able to see that in all the other false flag type events as well. So that was kind of how I did that in a nutshell. Now, I went really in depth into how I discovered what I discovered. And one of the things that I just discovered was listening to the tapes and listening to the voices of the flight attendants that called in and the reports and the FBI transcripts of what they said. And some of the things they said led me to believe that since I knew cell phones didn't work on the ground, then I knew that the phone calls had to have been made or they didn't work on the air. Cell phone calls had to have been made on the ground. Now, Betty Ong on Flight 11 and Amy Sweeney were the two people that called out on that first flight, Flight 11. And Betty Ong said something that really got my attention. She said, "He, as in one hijacker, he has sprayed pepper spray or mace in business class and we can't breathe in business class." Well, after 30 years of being in an aircraft, let me tell you, if somebody sprays cheap perfume in business class, you're going to smell it in coach. And if it's pepper spray or mace, you're going to feel the effects of that gas in coach. Doesn't matter. If you're in a pressurized cabin at altitude, the only time that anything sprayed in business class would stay in business class would be if the aircraft were on the ground and no longer pressurized. And that's what she said to me, and my experience heard that. She also said some other things. She said, "He stood upstairs." And that was kind of a partial sentence. He stood upstairs. There are no stairs in a 767. The only aircraft that has stairs is a 747. And she was on a 767. And when she said that, I realized that, okay, if they weren't pressurized and there was gas sprayed and it stayed in business class, that meant they were no longer in the air and pressurized. And she sees there, she's in a hangar. And so what I did then, she said another thing that really got me, and this is what really changed my world. She said, we're the first. And yes, indeed, they were the first of the four aircraft. And that, again, was a partial sentence. And what I had to do is I had to pick through the nonsense, basically, that she was saying, because she wasn't saying what she should have been saying. She wasn't using protocol. The most important thing, by the way, for her to say that day would have been, how did the hijackers get inside the cabin? Did they kick the door in or, you know, how? How? Because that's what we would want to prevent in the future. And they, you know, they got into the cockpit by, you know, fill in the blank. But none of the flight attendants said that. And so since they didn't follow protocol, it was very, very odd. And then Betty Ong went on to say these words, I don't know, but I think we might be being hijacked. And she also said, we're in the air. And, of course, a hijacking takes place in the air. I mean, that's like saying you were carjacked on your bike. I mean, of course you're in the air. If you were carjacked, you would be in your car, right? Well, hijacking only takes place in the air. We'd open the aircraft doors and get you out, you know, disarm the chutes and slide you right on down there. And so I started to see that she was letting out things that maybe only I was hearing, because this is, I mean, years after the after the event. And I was like, well, did she just say this so I could hear this? Because all I could hear was the truth coming out of her. And then the interesting thing about her coworker, Amy Sweeney, the other flight attendant that called, they both called at the same time. They were both on the phone to different company personnel at American Airlines for 27 minutes. During that 27 minutes, neither one of them coughed or complained about the effects of that pepper spray that had been sprayed in business class, which was another red flag to me. But Amy Sweeney went on to say that her and Betty Ong were sitting in the last row, second to the last row of coach seats, but Betty said she was at 3 right, or 3R, the jump seat on the right side of the aircraft at the very tail section. And she repeated that about a dozen times, which it's a nonsensical piece of information. I'm like, why would you say that? Because basically what that's saying is where her work position. She either bid to work there or she didn't have a choice, and that was the last work position. And that's a position that changes all the time. If she were really in a hijacking, she would have called in and said her name and her employee number, because that's how the company finds your next of kin and your emergency contact. So the fact that she didn't do that was abnormal to me as well. And so Amy Sweeney goes on to make the mistake that no flight attendant would ever make. So if you were ever riding around as a passenger, find comfort in this. She said the hijacker, again, was a he, one singular person, and she said he was 9B. And so I thought, well, that's really weird. She called back later to her supervisor and said, oh, I made a mistake. The hijacker's 10B, and he stabbed the passenger in 9B. Well, that just seemed like an odd thing, because let me tell you this. In a hijacking, in a normal hijacking, the name of the game was to delay the hijacker from getting into the cockpit. Delay. It was called the common strategy. It was an FAA protocol in place since the 70s. And it hadn't changed. Nothing had changed in it, because we hadn't had any hijacking. And so that since these are the protocols, they were not being followed. One of the things, the last thing you would do is sit on the telephone for a half an hour, because a real hijacker that didn't want that information on those phone calls to come out, a real hijacker would kill you and make your life pretty darn miserable if he caught you on the telephone. So you were not to draw attention to yourself. So the fact that they were on the phone for a half an hour and the information they were giving out was really weird to me. I mean, it was as a professional and all the training that I had. But I looked into this, a passenger in 9B, and lo and behold, if you can imagine this, we are expected to believe that 9B, who was originally tagged as the hijacker, they originally said he had a gun as well, and he was the he they were referring to, he actually was a highly trained assassin and an anti-hijacking specialist and a hostage rescue specialist from a foreign government intelligence agency. It's a branch of the Israeli Mossad and Israeli Defense Forces called the Sayeret Matkal. And he was fluent in English. He grew up in Denver, Colorado, went to Israel when he was 14, joined the IDF at 18, and then became a part of the Sayeret Metcalf Special Forces. Now, he was fluent in English, Hebrew, and Arabic. So now we're being asked to believe that a highly trained assassin who is trained to assassinate people, who was fluent in Arabic, who was sitting not 2 feet in front of the mouths of the two supposedly Arabic passengers whose names were never on the manifest, were planning the new Pearl Harbor attack of 9/11, and he did nothing about it. And they, for some reason, not knowing who he was or his training, decided to jump up, and before they took over that cockpit, we're led to believe they took a box cutter, a plastic box cutter, and cut him and killed him. So if you can believe that, you're in a deep state of being brainwashed. You need to just take your hand, look at it, and slap your face as hard as you can, and think about what I just told you, because this stuff has been laid out, and it was put over and over. Some of this story hasn't really been made public, but if you just Google search, in your little Google search box, passenger 9B as in boy, flight 11, you will find millions of pages. He is a hero. They have created this man to be the hero because we are led to believe he was the first person killed that day. And he was killed by people he was listening to make the plan of hijacking the aircraft. And he was an anti-hijacking specialist. And now I kind of did a little research on this guy because I just thought that was just such a beyond coincidence, insane thing for us to believe he was actually killed. His friend said about him he could kill any human being using a pen and a credit card. Now, this is a guy who has now had a communications company outside of Boston. And he was on a business trip, so we know he had a pen and a credit card handy. And why he didn't do this? Or are we just believing a very poorly written script? And speaking of scripts, as I went on to dissect what was going on, the two flight attendants on Flight 11 were giving completely conflicting reports, not only where they were both sitting. Amy Sweeney said they were both in a passenger seat, or a passenger row seat, second to the last row in coach. But Betty Ong said she was sitting in her jump seat. Well, a jump seat only holds one person. And so that's a little conflict. They also had a conflicting report about the passenger in 9B who was stabbed. And they said there was a doctor and a nurse caring for him, from Amy Sweeney. Betty Ong said there was no medical personnel on board to help. And so I saw something else. In a hijacking, it's extremely important that you're on the same track and there's only one form of truth. It doesn't change from row to row. And keep in mind also that these girls are sitting in the back end of coach. It's about 150 feet away from what was happening in the cockpit first class business class area on that aircraft. So another FAA protocol was for the flight attendants not directly involved with a hijacker were to, quote, unquote, sit down and not draw attention to yourself. That means not running up and down the aisle serving Cokes and 7-Up for coffee. And that's what we were led to believe as you hear a four-minute tape, only 4 minutes of Betty Ong's tape into reservations was recorded, but you do hear what appears to be other crew members coming back and forth from business and reporting to her what she is to tell the reservations person. And what I started to see then, I kept charts of what the National Transportation Safety Board claimed was going on board the aircraft, whether it was coming out of the sky. Some of the aircraft are coming out 6 to 10,000 feet a minute in a rapid, rapid descent, which would be horrifically frightening to any passenger and crew member. And you wouldn't be sitting on the phone talking very calmly to your husband or your children saying, well, we're being hijacked and it's just not looking good, and tell everyone I love them, and the total silence in the background. When you come out of the sky that fast in a rapid descent for a decompression or any other kind of emergency, the aircraft makes a very frightening, shuddering sound. It sounds like the airplane is going to fall apart. So it's very, very scary. I don't care how many times you do that. I've done it more than once. It's frightening every time. And, of course, I'm in a position where I'm supposed to be comforting people, but it's a very scary sound. It's also loud, and you would have heard that on the phone calls. One of the things I noticed, too, that all the people that received phone calls, especially off Flight 93, the last flight that supposedly went to Shanksville, is they said it was very, very quiet in the background, probably just like I am right now. There was no sound of jets or commotion or people screaming. And all of those things I put together, and I discovered how the aircraft were taken over remotely, the company that used it, the connections to the politicians, and the corporate companies that were involved in this, the military-industrial complex, where the airplanes were taken to, and who knows what they used. I'm not a computer graphics specialist or an energy weapons specialist. What they used to take those towers down, I don't know about that. I just know that the airplanes were not involved in what they showed you, because there was no crash remnants at Shanksville or at the Pentagon, and the aircraft
jump in there for a moment, because in reading your book, you talked about the Pentagon as being a highly protected place, which is, you know, like, yeah, it's the Pentagon, and planes are made of aluminum. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's just like all the buildings. I mean, if you just, again, Google search commercial plane crash and go look in the images, you're going to see that no matter what an aircraft hits, it doesn't dissolve into what it hits. Like, we're led to believe at the Pentagon, the airplane went right in and came out a little 10-foot hole in the back end. And you can see pictures of that hole, too, and it's completely round. I don't know how they expect us to believe that, because I studied crashes for 30 years. Aircraft are made of aluminum, and I've seen hail the size of a baseball in the Midwest in the United States completely destroy a 747 before it could get on the ground. A bird strike will do the same thing. And if you'll just recall just recently where Delta slid off the runway, and they were probably doing maybe 50 miles an hour at the most on the runway, and they went into a wrought iron fence before they went into the brink there in LaGuardia, and it ripped off one wing completely. It's a wing you can't see in the picture, but that wing is completely gone. The other one's broken in half, and then the underbelly of the fuselage completely torn apart. This is just from a wrought iron fence, and it's kind of a open fencing thing. You can see the fence and what it looks like. And also the whole nose cone, if you'll look at that, that's really interesting, because the whole rounded part, when I talk about the nose cone, that rounded part that you see in front of the cockpit, that's sometimes, I know one airline put a smiley face up there, that's a composite plastic, and it's there for a reason, composite plastic, because there's a radar in there. So it's gone off the Delta plane as well. That's what happens when you're going 50 miles an hour in an aluminum aircraft and you just hit a wrought iron fence. Just take a look at that kind of damage. But that's what happens. The tail section, the landing gear, the luggage, there's things that always survive a crash. I mean, if you look at MH17 that crashed in the Ukraine, same kind of thing. You see the passengers. Even Air Asia that went into the ocean, they pulled up this gigantic tail section. That was just an Airbus, a much smaller aircraft than the two airplanes that were involved. So that's why when I saw the Pentagon, there was no tail section. There was no wings. There was nothing on the outside in the lawn. And so, yeah, I do wrap that up. And just so you know, the character in my book that my protagonist meets on a flight, who was a retired military person, that is a true story. And I did, in fact, meet him. I just changed his name to protect his identity. But all of the things he said, he was in the Pentagon that day and reassured me in person that there was no 757 there. And so there were interesting reasons for the Pentagon to be hit. But, yes, it is. Normally it has protected, is considered to be the most protected building in the entire world.
Rebecca, the facts that you have and that you've gathered here are absolutely flabbergasting, and the book is phenomenal in putting all these pieces together in a very readable book. Why did you decide to do this as fiction?
Well, not everybody, obviously not everybody can do the kind of research that I did. I was kind of obsessed with finding the truth. I wanted to find the passengers, the crew members in the plane, because I knew that two of those crashes didn't happen from day one. And that was my driving force. And I actually felt a divine presence in doing so. So I feel like a lot of the information that I discovered was, well, here's how it was. I found information about the two women involved in FBI documents that I found online that no one has ever said a thing about ever. And it's one of the most mind-blowing details that I found, and even people that have been researching this day and night for a decade or longer have come forward and said, where'd you find that? I'm like, well, I found it from a Team 7 FBI investigation report, and it's on the internet. I actually just stumbled across it, and that's why I say I feel there is divine presence to find the truth and bring it to light, because of incidences like this. I mean, I was in final edit for The Methodical Illusion, and I self-edited as best as I could. I couldn't put it with anyone else that didn't know what I knew. And so, you know, there's a few type errors in there in this first edition, but I just had to get it out. There was a driving force behind me. I can't explain what that was. After the book came out, I got in touch with a researcher who gave me a terabyte of Freedom of Information Act information that I go through when I'm at some downtime and research through some of the details of the, this is the FAA and NORAD radar and wave files and written transcripts from the FBI and the FAA and NORAD. And so when I got that with a terabyte of information, I U.S. mailed a brand new hard drive to him to have him upload this information. And I said, let me pay the postage when you get it uploaded and send it to me. He sent me a screenshot, and the postage came to $9.11. And at that point, I knew the truth is coming out, and there's nobody that can stop it or me from talking about this. And I feel the reason for this is that by dissecting 9/11, with this insider's perspective that I had and discovering how the aircraft through this radar were hidden and brought to a location, and then fake radar was created to make us think where they were flying, and that radar has been faked. And there were two companies in the FAA headquarters that I discovered. One was called PTEC, and one was called MITRE. And MITRE basically is the shadow government company. It's MITRE, if your listeners want to Google search it. PTEC is still involved, but they changed their name, and I'm not sure if it's called Agile or Agile Intel. They've changed their name two or three times. At the time of 9/11, PTEC, excuse me, which was a young startup company with the help of Michael Chertoff, was put into 22 U.S. government computer systems, including NORAD, the FAA, the Air Force One, the White House bunkers, most major banks, the U.S. Navy, most all military branches were infiltrated by a software that had a backdoor installed in it via this company called PTEC. The interesting thing about PTEC is that they literally ran them out of the country, supposedly, but they really just changed their name in 2003. They were financed by a Lebanese millionaire and a Saudi Arabian millionaire and run by a Jewish attorney. Just let that digest a little bit on what the programming on the TV tells you and who is the accomplices here. And through Michael Chertoff, who, by the way, is also a dual citizen with Israel, they managed to get themselves into 22 U.S. computer systems that we have complete control of our national security to this very day. Now, they also were able to make artificial flight plans using radar in text form, and I have that in this NORAD Freedom of Information Act information that I have that I'm researching, going through with some other researchers. So there are some things about 9/11 that are so truthful, and I do believe that a divine presence in this universe wants this truth to come out to as many ears as possible.
I'm going to pause because I know you have questions. Okay. Thank you. In all of your research, do you have a sense? Now, we're basing this all on your fictional work, and I understand why. Do you sort of bump into the who's behind this? I mean, the why? Did you ever have a sense of, I mean, I don't want to give away the end of your book, so if that's part of it, we'll just say, go out and get the book, which I recommend because it's a great read. But I mean, really,
well, thank you.
Do you have a sense of that?
Yes. Well, we were talking about Wag the Dog. That was a great movie to explain how things are done in this world. These are called false flags. And prior to 9/11, there was a group of people that are often referred to as neocons. And you can look this up on Wikipedia also. If you just Google search, it's called PNAC, Project for a New American Century. And this is a document that was written that called for a quote-unquote new Pearl Harbor event, much like 9/11 later on was referred to, and I often refer to it as that, but they actually wrote the Project for a New American Century. The new Pearl Harbor event was required to get the American people on board to unfurl their flags and fight the wars that have been the result of the illusion that they painted that we know as the 9/11 terror attack. So, yes, there would be your group of people, and there's quite a few of them, and you're going to recognize them because most of those people show up on CNN and Fox News. The signers of PNAC, and they're all there, and it's PNAC, Project for a New American Century. And if you Google search either one of those things, you'll find the history, you'll find the information, and find the signers of that. And I'm sure you'll be very surprised who they are and their religious association.
One of the things that impresses me about the book, and there are many, it's a wonderful story, very readable, but things are happening now that we didn't know about then that you wrote about last year. So there are some very prophetic things in this book. Is this just speculation on your part, or do you know something you didn't write about?
You know, it's interesting because I actually wrote the book 2 years before I got it out in print. And this last year, in September, I spent a couple hours on the phone with a New York firefighter and discussing what he found. He spent a month on the pile of the Twin Towers. And what I wanted to know is what kind of, you know, feelings did he have and what did he find? And what he was telling me is the firefighters that were up higher in the building, all they found was their breathing apparatus, that their human bodies were completely disintegrated. There was like nothing left. Unless they were just entering the building or down in the lobby, if they were inside that building, when whatever it was struck that building and made it go, there was just nothing left. And that's very unusual. I also worked as a firefighter and had lots of training in emergency medicine. And to find a human body completely disintegrated as if it were cremated is very unusual. And so I got off the phone, and I told my husband, you know that book I wrote 2 years ago? So that makes it even more prophetic. And it was mind-blowing to me when I went back to start editing the book, how prophetic it really was. But something else happened, and I worked this into the story, and this is not fantasy. The only thing I did is I didn't have the list of cities. And here's the thing that was really scary to me. Once I discovered who was behind the 9/11 attacks, really, and that the 19 hijackers were either 10 of them still alive and quite possibly 9 of them total make-believe, just like I planned to do, grabbing a first name from one gentleman and a last name from the other. But I found an article written in an Israeli newspaper, and what really troubled me is I'd been reading the news in a bunch of U.S. news sites, and I hadn't read this. And as soon as I read this, I went back and looked again, and not one news agency in the United States covered this. But it was an Israeli, I believe it was from called Ynet News. It was an online in English newspaper that I linked off of probably from someone on Facebook. I was using a brand new iPad, so I didn't know how to bookmark anything. I thought, oh, I'll just go back. I can find this again when I get home. But I read it out loud to my husband, and basically the article said the Israeli intelligence. Now, 9B was part of the Israeli intelligence, remember? The Sayeret Matkal guy in 9B, the anti-hijacking specialist, we're led to believe was killed. He was actually on a U.S. carrier on the morning of 9/11. I'm reading this. Israeli intelligence had intercepted al-Qaeda plans to attack 5 or 6 major cities in the United States. and they would use biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons over a 9-day period starting from May 2nd, the anniversary of Osama bin Laden's fake Navy SEAL death, and they would go for 9 days until May 11th. And that 9 and 11 literally jumped off the screen at me. I was like, what? Well, we know who Al-Qaeda is. The CIA and the Mossad operate and run and created Al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden, as a CIA operative, was known as Tim Osman. He was in the United States in the mid-80s. He met with Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was working for Bill Clinton, and he's actually been working with President Obama even. The CIA had funneled and created the Al-Qaeda, which was called the Mujahideen at the time, to fight the Soviet Union in Afghanistan in the mid-80s. I also found that he received, Osama bin Laden, a couple billion dollars just a couple months prior to 9/11. So he really wasn't our enemy. He was just a creative and a convenient boogeyman. Now, when you read the book, you'll find that military guy was in Afghanistan, and within 3 weeks after the attacks, his special operations force actually had Osama bin Laden in their sights, and they were denied the ability to shoot or kill him. They let him go twice. Again, they did it in Tora Bora. The U.S. military was ordered to not shoot Osama bin Laden. Now, let me tell you something else that really blew my mind. After my book came out, I've been contacted by lots of pilots and flight attendants from American and United, especially, but all airlines. And the pilots love this book so much. They're buying it by the case direct from the publisher at a great discount. Cases of, 24 or 48 books at a time, and give them away. That's how convinced they are that this is what I found was the truth. And these are pilots that flew the Boeing 767 for United and American. So it's kind of amazing to see that kind of support and those kind of people that are coming forward now that I'm their mouthpiece and supporting me for speaking the truth for them. But when I heard from a flight attendant purser from American who was stuck in Tokyo at the time of 9/11, she said, and 2 or 3 days into this event, when they came to a briefing, she was with the United Airlines and American Airlines personnel at One Tokyo Hotel, and a United executives came in and briefed them every day. And when they told them that Mohammed Atta was the ringleader of the event, she said the flight attendants for American all but had a heart attack. He was an executive platinum million-mile passenger on American, and everyone with enough seniority to fly first class knew him by name and face. Now, according to the official story, Mohammed Atta, who was the ringleader, was flying around enough to garner over 1 million miles, and that was over a 2 to 3 year period prior to 9/11.
One of the things I find in the book that was the pivotal point for me and kept me turning the pages and trying to get to the crux of this was the secret recording on the pen. And one of the things, I love that passage so much, I typed it out, because I want to see it as where it came from, and I'm going to read one little teeny piece of it, because at the end of your book, you give hope, and I think that hope for America and anybody dealing with terrorists is one of the most important parts of the book. Yes, the facts. We suspected them. You confirmed them. But how all of this put together. Now, this is just a tiny part from this secret recording. But this is only the beginning. I think it is his name Khalid? Khalid?
Khalid, uh-huh.
Khalid yelled with profound glee in his voice. Indeed, Khalid, these infamous days will be the beginning. For 2 weeks, devastation will reign in selected cities across America, and you've talked about it. We will unleash the biologicals we stole from Iraq, the anthrax we still have from Fort Dixon. I didn't know any of that. The nuclear device with Iranian signatures we helped them develop, and that's going on in the news right now, and even the genetically modified food toxins we helped create. the chaos will be so profound that martial law and the suspension of all rights will follow. Hal McLean helped write the NDAA, so we will have no problem putting people in FEMA camps that refuse to turn in their guns. Soon, the world will be ours, and we will have total control. You wrote this 2 years ago, and this is exactly what's happening right now. Can you expand on that comment?
I can't really explain it. I don't even know where it all came from. And that when I went back to edit it, and my husband helped me, we were going, well, how did I know this? I mean, this is all coming to pass right now. And I said, I don't know, but let's get it out there in print because it has to. I just felt this compelling push from the universe. And, you know, I studied a little bit about frequencies as well. And one of the things that I notice, especially a lot in social media, but this is a reality. I think people really, you want to know, well, first off, you know, the truth will set you free, and it definitely opens your eyes. But that first step is a Lulu. Let me tell you, when I discovered the location the planes were taken and how that whole thing happened and what happened to the planes and the passengers, I physically got sick. It was as if someone kicked me right in the gut. I couldn't write. I could hardly eat. For about a month, I just was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. My world fell apart. And so when I say that first step's a Lulu, it is. But these frequencies, if you stand in truth and love and joy, those are the highest frequencies. And if we collectively can continue to do that as often as possible and avoid going into the frequencies that are fear and doubt and hate, and if you listen to anything on television and just do this experiment, go turn on Fox News for an hour and CNN for an hour, and you are being programmed to hate Muslims, to hate people from the Middle East. And one of the things I discovered is what all the people that were being told what to say on those phone calls used a terminology you and I would never use. He's of Middle Eastern descent. Well, unless they're wearing a costume from Kuwait or Saudi, that white robe, I don't even know what it's called, you wouldn't know they're from there. You can't tell an Iranian from a Mexican from a man from Turkey. So nobody would use that terminology. Trust me, I flew aircraft where I had 70 different ethnic groups and languages being spoken, and I, in 30 years, would never describe someone as looking Middle Eastern. Don't forget, Israel is in the Middle East as well. And so you can't tell an Israeli from a Palestinian if you put them side by side. And so nobody would use that terminology. But that the details that came out in those phone calls had to have been given to create the wars that we went to. So we would have an enemy to kill. And if you look at who we're killing Muslim people that had absolutely nothing to do with the illusion of 9/11. There were no 19 Arabs. That's a whole make-believe story. I even found the truth that the FBI created the first list of 19 hijackers included four different names that are on there now, still 19, but the four names. One of them was an FAA aviation safety specialist in Florida. He came forward and said, I'm not a hijacker. I wasn't on one of those planes. I'm working with the FAA in Florida. And my brother, who you claim was on the, this is the FBI claiming these names were on the manifest initially. This was in the first 72 hours when we were all unfurling our flags and figuring out who to hate. What Middle Eastern country are we going to go bomb? Sign me up. And we collectively all did that as a nation. As they unfurled that flag, we chose our Super Bowl team. We were going to be with the red, white, and blue, because our president said, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Choose your team. And so we all did that. We were all programmed to do that. I did it too. I mean, when I went back to work, we were handed American flag stickers, and we were not allowed to put stickers on our uniforms or on our luggage or anything until that event. And then we got to choose our team and stand proudly with our president.
Go ahead. There are some clues, because we're running out of time. There's so many more questions that are coming in from our audience. There were clues that you talk about in your book that showed this was known to so many people beforehand, the gold and the stock. Can you talk about those a minute?
Yes, there was. President Bush Sr. had, through the financial collapse of the Soviet Union, had created both fraudulent gold bonds on paper and actually stolen physical gold from the Philippines and the Soviet Union as I like to the tune of $240 billion worth of gold. Now, he had to, those gold bonds were expiring September 12, 2001. They're called Brady bonds. Again, you can look them up online. But they were expiring the next day. They were held at the office of Cantor Fitzgerald, which was a targeted office in the tower. I believe they were in the North Tower. That's actually exactly where the aircraft went into, a Cantor Fitzgerald, Marshall McLuhan area. And so those are gone. The actual certificates are no longer existing, but they had to funnel into, launder actually, into a very heavily monitored gold market. And that's why they closed down the Security Exchange Commission for 2 weeks until that gold was reintroduced into the market. So there were things like that. Put options were put on United and American, lots of insurance fraud. Even the guy who owned the towers, he got double indemnity, something like $7 billion when it was all said and done. He actually insured his buildings for terrorist attacks by airplanes, so he knew something was coming on too. Now, I wanted to tell you this. Since my book came out, my publisher got a phone call from someone who was ordering a box of books by bulk from him, and was telling the story that when he was on vacation, he met a family that was, the husband was in the Navy and his wife worked in the Pentagon, and she told him the story, and he conveyed it to my publisher 1 hour before anything hit in New York City. Now, remember, the first airplane hit at 8:46 a.m. 1 hour prior to that, she was working inside the Pentagon. Her phone on her office rang, and a voice, she doesn't know who, said, "Get the heck out of that Pentagon and get out now," and hung up. And she grabbed her purse and left the building, and that's the only reason she's still alive this day, and she still doesn't know who did. But somebody knew an hour before something hit downtown New York to call people in the Pentagon.
What can we do to help you spread this word, and what can we do as people to not have all this stuff dumped on us?
The best thing you can do is get all your news and information from off, not the television. That is complete programming. And you can see who you're being programmed to hate, either the black and white anti, the racial issue that CNN is really popular hating, trying to create racial hate between black and white. So we have a black president and a black attorney general and a black Department of Homeland Security leader, and yet people are on the streets claiming that we're racist. It's insane, but that's part of their agenda. They want to have a civil war between races. You've got to keep yourself working out of this. I know this is, sounds really weird, but you've got to stand in the truth and keep the frequencies of love and joy in your heart. Try not to allow being fearful, because it lowers the vibration. Collectively, we need to stand in the truth, and we need to stand and love each other and not fall for the manipulation of hating people because they're from the Middle East, or maybe hating people because they're from the south of the border and they're illegal, or that whatever, or they're black, or they're white, or they're Chinese. I mean, any group, just be careful of being manipulated. Start figuring that out, because the CIA has had control of the television. The networks are all owned by the same people. And what the divine source here that is pushing this truth has shown us, that Brian Williams and Bill O'Reilly, just two of the biggest people on television that are supposed to be talking truth in the news, have been caught lying for over a decade. If they were lying 13 years ago, you trust me, they've been lying 14 years ago, and they've lied every time they've spoken about 9/11. And I basically proved that. And I am working on a sequel, by the way, to bring the rest of this information out of what I've continued to keep researching. But at the very end, in that final edit, when I found the women involved, I mean, my husband's like, "You have got to stop." And I'm like, "No, I have to put this in, because nobody ever talked about the women." Now, I'm going to let your audience know that you can find one of the women if you Google search and find the Wikipedia for Cece Lyles. Her name is spelled C-E-E-C-E-E-L-Y-L-E-S. And Flight 93, and there's a little player there, and it's a recording she left on her home phone to her husband and kids. And when she's finished talking, you can hear her hand the phone to someone. You can hear the fingers over the receiver, and you can hear a woman's voice say at the end, "You did great." And that was 15 minutes before impact in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, Flight 93. Nobody is telling a flight attendant they did great. We're in control. no flight attendant's going to let passengers take hot water and coffee pots of hot water and try to take over the cabin, a cockpit, because we're in control. We train for hijacking procedures. We are well trained. We train every single year for that. We would never give untrained passengers the ability to help us in a hijack situation. You don't know what you're doing. And so the fact that we are led to believe on Flight 93 that the crew members just sat back and let the four passengers, by the way, those four passengers, the Let's Roll heroes, they all sat on different phone calls to different people on the ground in different rows and coach up until the very moment that the Let's Roll, Let's Take Over the Cockpit thing supposedly happened. That couldn't happen either. The aircraft was coming out of the sky 10,000 feet a minute at a 40-degree angle and at one point upside down, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. It cannot be. That is false reality.
Is anybody trying to stop this book or threatening you?
Well, since I was on Coast to Coast, the book shot up to number 20 on Amazon. They say it's temporarily out of stock. It's print on demand. So if you go to Amazon and order The Methodical Illusion, it'll say it's temporarily out of, but it'll take a week, maybe two, because it is the biggest selling book right now. Barnes & Noble also is having problems finding it, but it's on the Ingram book list, Methodical Illusion by Rebecca Roth. And they should be able to order it for you, where my publisher is freaking out because of what Barnes & Noble is saying is out of print. It just started, and we just came out with it in November. If you order it on Amazon, you can also order an autographed copy from the autographed book page on my website, and that's simply www.methodicalillusion.com. The first three chapters of the book are on my website. You can read them, start reading. And the charge for the book is $20 total off the for the autographed book off my website, and that includes shipping and everything. And so I'm getting books delivered to me 100 or so every day, and we have probably got 500 or 600 orders for autographed books here. And so I like doing autographed books because it connects the reader to me, and that if they have questions, they can email me questions afterwards. If you want to see FBI documents, I can send them to you as a link.
That's incredible. But I think after this show today, people are going to want this instantly. So get a Kindle, guys.
Yes, it is instant on Kindle. It's $9.11 on Kindle. And that's the best instant way to do it. And if you don't own a Kindle, you can just get a free app to read it on your iPhone, iPad, lots of different free apps on Amazon. So, yes, that's the best way to get it, the quickest way.
$9.11 is the price. That's incredible. In the few minutes that we have left, are you allowed to talk about the president's speech at the end, which I think is incredible, and once people read it, they're going to want that for America. Where did that come from?
My husband wrote it.
It's just incredible. The book starts with the premise that we got rid of all the trash.
It actually came from his heart, and it is, I mean, we just feel like we're just everyday Americans, and it's what this country needs. And we wanted to leave the reader with hope that that's who we're looking for, and that's there is hope to fix this.
Well, I think the idea that your book starts with, that America has awoken and they've got rid of the people who are manipulating them, and they're putting in somebody with integrity. And the way the story is woven, Rebecca, I absolutely love it. And it's a number one bestseller on Amazon. I just can't tell people how strongly I feel about this. And our audience can tell you I don't recommend many things. But I recommend this and your heart to people. So please stay in touch with us and let us know when anything comes out that you want to announce. We will open the door to you. We're available to you because our audience really cares, and I think you do too.
I do. Thank you for having me, and I hope everybody starts to help each other wake up in love.
Richard has one last question.
This is not a setup for a lengthy conversation. I just have to ask, for someone who was in the industry for over 30 years, when you travel today, does the TSA make you feel safer?
Let me just say this. I will not travel via airplane ever again.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
For any reason. If I can't drive there, I won't go there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Me too. We Rebecca, thank you so much for being here. We have a couple of announcements that were sent to us right before the show that need to get on. So this one is from Dr. John Apsley, and we've had him on the show several times about radiation and Fukushima, and there is another alarm about it. Remember that we have this software on our site, soundhealthoptions.com, under downloads and radiation. So you can check yourself for radiation exposure and poisoning, and there's charts there that can help you nutritionally. I can't recommend it's strong enough. That is yours. You have to register it, yes, but it's absolutely yours, free, to help people in your community, and especially if you're living on the Pacific Coast and somehow Massachusetts and Connecticut, right on the top of eastern United States, has gotten involved with this. So download that software. We'll register it for you. It's totally free. There's video there to help you learn to use it, or you can join us on Happy Hour, which is every Tuesday evening, and we'll show you how to use it, and you can ask questions. Next week on Blog Talk Radio, we'll be having Alan Phillips. He will be talking to us about the mandates, the adult mandates, another spin, total false issue that's been laid on us. But he'll show us how we can sign up for, I don't even know what it's called, so you don't have to get a vaccination. Richard, do you know that?
I don't. Not off the top of my head. I don't have the right words. But I know that we've had Alan Phillips on before, and he's a really smart guy. I like Alan.
Yeah, waivers. He's put together some waivers for people so that if they do come to get you and drag you off to these FEMA camps that even Rebecca's talking about, it's part of the same thing that Rebecca brought to us. And I bet we could have her on for 3 or 4 hours, and she would still be going with all of this facts that she has collected. Her book is incredible, her heart's incredible, and so is John Apsley, and we are very honored to be able to bring both of them to you and their information. So thank you for being here. We're a little over time. We appreciate your patience. Please post this very important show to all of your friends. Let them know where it is. It'll be on Stitcher and Blog Talk Radio, right, Richard?
It'll be on the front page of Sound Health Options, down in the lower left-hand corner there, soundhealthoptions.com. There's a player down there. It'll probably be there in about 15 to 20 minutes. It's available on Stitcher, which is a free app, cross-platform app that you can also use on the computer, which is great because it has built-in social media sharing, so if you find it and you want to share it with your friends, you can do it right from there. And also for those that use iTunes, you can go to iTunes and the audios, podcasts, you can search for Sherry Edwards and the show will show up there as well. It's everywhere. That was truly stupendous, and I think Sherry's right that we could have Rebecca back and talk for hours. I can tell we'll have you back. Please do, if you have something, you know, when you have something new you want to talk about, let us know and we'll have you back. That was fabulous. Everybody have an excellent rest of the weekend, and we will talk to you on Tuesday, although I'm not sure what we're talking about yet. Thanks, everybody.
Later.
Bye.